the tabletop. Take away
game mechanics on display.
Three designers share the stage.
Pick a genre and we'll play
the tabletop. Take away.
Welcome back to the Tabletop Takeaway. I'm Trevor Muller-Hagel.
I'm Ananda Gunaratna.
And I'm Charlie McCarron.
And today we are continuing our worker placement series with The White Castle. Now, this game takes worker placement a very different direction. You don't have your own pool of workers per se that create an action economy for you, but instead you have a joint pool of dice that you're pulling from and placing them on spots on the board. And then that can invoke your workers to join the board in different areas. There's a lot going on in this game, so I won't go into in-depth detail. I highly recommend looking it up and just seeing what the board looks like. But just for kind of an overall kind of view of what the game's got going on, you have the left side of the board is gardeners. They can actually create their benefit multiple times throughout the game. The center, the White Castle, is where your courtiers go. And that's where you can kind of have them rise up through the ranks, get you access to cards to help you do combos. And then the training yards is where the kind of martial characters are, the warriors. And they actually can grant you one-time benefits when they go there and then also enhance the victory points of your courtiers. So there's also a lot of other spots around the board. You have, you know, things like the crane or the passage of time at the top. You can invoke that through different actions. There's the well action, which is kind of the basic action you can take no matter what die you place there. And then you also have kind of this, the outside the walls, which allows you to use the any of those three spaces I just mentioned and sending workers to those places. The main premise, though, is that you are drafting a die from these bridges and placing them on a spot, and there is a die on that spot with a face value. If the die you place there is less than that die value, you have to pay to go there. If it's more, then you get money for going there. It's all very kind of hovers around an equilibrium around that. Like, and so if there's another dice already there, you can place a die on top of that using that same rule. So if it's for less, you can get more money if you place a higher die on top. Now, each of the spaces usually allows for two colors to go there. There's white die, orange die, and black die, or maybe it's a red die. And so, like, you can actually stack them up a little bit, but only two high. So once two dice have gone there, no more dice can go there. So you have that kind of classic worker placement restriction. In addition, you have just combos up to wazoo. You have three resources that you're tracking as kind of hiring resources for the different worker types. And then you also have money and what we were calling flowers, which I think are those, not edicts.
Seals.
What are those called again?
They're called seals.
Seals, technically. Yes. So yeah, you have all these different things working together, all coming together and making this really dynamic, combo-heavy system where you only have 9 turns throughout the game, and then it's done. But those 9 turns will take you still probably an hour and a half or so to get through.
Yeah. Each turn is super impactful.
Yeah. And so every 3 turns, you re-roll the dice. And you have new dice to choose from. It matters if you choose from the left side of the bridge or the right side of the bridge, the left being the lower dice, the right being the higher dice. It's a treat. I love it.
Yeah. One thing that strikes me about this game is it combines like very scarce resources. Mm-hmm. Because there were numerous instances where we were, well, money mainly, we were super low on, but like other resources too, like seals or the ones that you use to get the
rice
guys,
or iron or
yeah.
pearls.
Yeah. I mean, it's an extremely tight or scarce resource system, but at the same time, you have this abundance of combos you can do.
Right.
Like you take one action and it lets you take a different action and that lets you take a different action as long as you have the resources to fuel those, which I guess kind of makes sense because you have in the game only 9 actions. So the resources are So having a lot of resources lets you take extra actions by spending those. And I guess that's why the resources are scarce.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of worker placement games, you end up with having a lot of actions you take because you have a lot more workers and you're doing more and more with those unique workers. But in this, you're actually figuring out how to string your combos together so that you get more work from a worker, from an instance of playing something.
Yeah. You know what? It is a lot like a roll and write.
Yes.
Actually. I mean, you even have the dice that you're rolling, right?
Yeah.
You roll the dice, you do things with the dice, and then you try to trigger a bunch of combos. That's like the roll and write formula.
Yeah, this is very Three Sisters almost, which is really funny.
Yeah, but it has also the player interaction, which makes it different than most roll and writes.
Right, right.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing, having played it a second time here now, is like the initial roll really feels, I don't know if they tried to theme it this way, but it kind of feels like, ooh, it wasn't a good year for us in the final round.
Yeah, very bad.
No,
year.
Like maybe 1-6 and the rest were like 4 and below of all the dice.
And, ones and twos.
Yeah. And I like how we all have that challenge then to figure out like, well, this is going to impact all of us equally. So we really have to change our strategy. And yeah, it's so puzzly.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like what do you think? This one feels like it's almost at the limit of how many different things you can think about. And I know some people could overanalyze, but
yeah.
What do you think makes a good puzzly game like that work?
I think if I'm looking at all of these board spots here, right, every single one has a victory point and then a kind of effect that it will do. And so like having those two things where you have like you get points for this, then you also have this action that it does, and then making sure that some of those actions can trigger other actions. And so like tying action to more actions, especially if it's specific types of actions, instead of just like, oh, you get plus one action. It's like, oh, great, I'll just do this then. It's like, no, you get plus one of this specific type of action, and maybe there's three options of that action. I think that's really what makes it feel tighter and not as overwhelming with those chains. It's like, now pay attention to this area. Now pay attention to that area. You're not looking at the whole space all of the time.
Yeah.
And you still are only placing one die
to
trigger everything. So it's not like you can do an infinite combo of...
Yeah, you don't get more die to place.
You don't get dice back to place more. But.
Yeah. Well, and every action that you take is draining some of your resources also.
Yeah.
So at some point, you're going to run out.
And you have a low maximum, too. I think 7 is pretty low in terms of max resource count for those other resources.
Yeah.
And money is more infinite, but, like, yeah. It's nice having that limiter because then you can't just, like, oh, I'll just get 6, you know, iron every turn, and then I'll have 15 iron, and then I'll just go to the training yard and hire 5 or 3 people, which will just explode the numbers. It keeps everything nice and limited.
I mean, and it has aspects of, you know, efficiency, right? It's it's definitely got another efficiency puzzle. I think the efficiency puzzle here is maybe... Well, in some ways, it's not as strong as Architects of the West Kingdom. But in other ways, it kind of is, because the action combos are definitely very impactful when you get them just right, when you have the resources you need to go down that action chain and get a bunch of points. But often the efficiency gains... So one of the sources of efficiency is the dice, of course, because if you have a high number like a 6, you can get a bunch of coins by going over a low number. But also, if you play a low number, you activate your lantern ability. And as the game goes on, you're building that up, and so it's getting stronger and stronger. And so the impulse is there to use that more. But also, when you place a low die, that offers the opportunity for someone to get a lot of coins by placing a high die over it. So the situation is always changing in terms of like what the most efficient action is, just based on what dice other people have taken. Because also when you
which
take,
which is cool, because like a lot of games, like my other game designer friend Trevor, I have three game design friends named Trevor.
That's true.
But Trevor Kupfer, he sometimes will be like, "Yeah, I know what I'm doing for the next 5 turns," and he writes it down and he's like goes to get a drink or something. So, and that can be a problem with worker placement games. Whereas this one, like now that you mention it, every turn I'm replanning a little bit, which isn't always a good thing, but I feel like 50-50 between like knowing what I want to do and then, oh, that changed things a bit.
It usually lets you keep your heading, like where you're trying to get to. You normally don't have to adjust that. Just how you actually get there specifically can change. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we had so many farmer squares out the entire game. So we were all farming. But like, what if there were more military and you had more warrior actions out there? Then would we all be in the warriors, or would we be trying to get rid of those so that we got those cleared faster? It's really interesting.
Yeah.
I do think, just a real quick thing. I was thinking when you say that, like this setup of the game, I feel like any game like this is beneficial to have some randomized elements, whether that's the cards we start with that sway our strategy, the dice roll at the beginning, like having input randomness.
And I didn't even mention with the actual setup of the game, like all of the training yards are different. Those can be variable. All of the dice type.
The action spots in the castle.
Yep. All the action spots are variable. Especially even the colors are variable game to game. So, you know, the first one we have here is white, white, orange. That may not be white, white, orange for every gameplay. Mm-hmm. So those can all be very dynamic and changes everything and changes the whole scope of the game. So really it's about what are the players experiencing together instead of like what's unique for me in this game, which I think is really cool.
Mm-hmm. So one thing that's kind of interesting is you have your own engine kind of that you can build, because as you put your guys out on the board, you're exposing more and more bonuses for placing a die on your own board rather than on the shared board. But your own spaces are also the most expensive spaces. All of them are sixes, which means that, you know, most of the time you're going to be paying coins to use your own board. And even when you're not gaining any coins. So why do you suppose it does this? Why is your own engine more expensive than the common board?
I think it's intended to be more of a late game choice. And so you should maybe have more things already built up. You'll have, so as you put more people on the board, like Ananda was saying, you can have more spots be freed up. So right now for my gardener spot, I played my last gardener the last round. So if I were able to play again, if I had a six that was on the black die, then I would get 4 steel, 2 coin, and 2 lantern actions, and I'd get to move the passage of time 1. And that is so much stuff you'd get for 1 die placement. And then I get 2 lanterns, and my lanterns produce a rice, passage of time, and a victory point each time. So I'd get each of those twice whenever I'd play it. So like at the end of the game, it feels really good to be able to do it. But at the beginning, like you might have like 2 iron or an iron. And it's like, well, is it really worth the 6? But when we rolled so many 6s that first round, it's like, oh, yeah, we have so many. Like, why not just play on that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's. I think that, that's really interesting.
Yeah, that's the kind of the contrast from the first time I played this game where we rolled a ton of 6s. And then it thematically feels fun because it's thinking about it now. It's like, oh, well, we don't need to go to the main central board. We can, like, build up our own stuff because money is not an issue.
Yep.
But game mechanics-wise, I think it's good they have those sixes there so that people don't just, like, hammer on the same. It's less interesting to go to your own board most usually.
You're not interacting. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess it encourages... Yeah, it encourages interacting with the common board so that you can experience the dice mechanic a little bit more, right? Where you're stacking the dice and they're making it cheaper or more expensive to do an action, more player interaction that way. Than just, but yeah, you know, in a lot of games, the thing in front of you feels like your own personal special machine to use. And so, it's interesting that this game discourages you from using it quite as much.
But it still has the, like, interesting thing that your cards you gain from the middle are also now influencing your strategy if we were using our own boards a little more. That's a cool aspect too.
I never felt that I had enough money to take advantage of my own board.
Whenever I did it, it was because I had a 5 or a 6 out there that I could use.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm like looking at it, I'm like, man, I really wish I could have launched that last one a couple times because that would have been really cool. But
yeah,
here we are.
There's also another mechanic that I'm kind of wondering about, which is, so you've got these bridges, and the bridges each start with 4 dice, and 9 of the dice are going to be removed. And as long as there are dice left on a bridge, if you have a gardener there, it's going to passively produce something.
Yeah.
Which, like, okay, I guess it opens up hate drafting a little bit, but... I don't know, what do you guys think? Why is that mechanic there, where gardeners only produce if there's dice left on their bridge?
That's interesting.
I think the designer is obsessed with tying everything together, so that's my guess. But I actually like it, because it does give a little bit more tension towards the end of the round, whereas, like, if you had your turn already, then you kind of check out for the next 2 turns, even if it's just a little like, ooh, I hope they don't take this.
Sure.
Maybe it keeps people engaged a little bit towards the end.
Or, you know, we had table talk about it too. Like, no, Charlie, don't take that one, because you're going to mess up everyone's lives. Like, don't take it.
Yeah. And so, it's, I like that our gardeners are communally kind of,
of our gardeners, or all of us had gardeners on the center row. So, like, on both sides of this in a row, too. So Charlie was just the only one that didn't have it on both.
I suppose, yeah, it is another criterion for choosing which die you want to use.
Yeah.
Which is good. I think it's good generally in games to have multiple reasons why you would want to take a particular action, because that, you know, that creates side effects.
Makes it more interesting.
That can drive the game. Like, I'm taking this black 6 because I don't want your gardener to do anything, but now that means I need to take an action that uses a black 6, for example.
Right.
Yeah. This game, I think, if we were to do the web of, I forget what you called it, Ananda, but when you...
The connection.
Basically, like a mind map of the action web.
Oh, yeah.
Like how things tie into each other. If we did that for this game, they would be very tightly interwoven. And
it would be a ball.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like Carcassonne.
Which is, yeah, which is cool.
Yeah. So I guess I think my takeaway from this game maybe is that a few high impact turns can sometimes be better than having a lot of low impact turns, or I guess you don't need a lot of turns for a game to be good.
Yeah,
as long as the turns that you have are high impact. This game, it's like, it seems like you have so few actions, but because of the combos and the freedom the game gives you to do things efficiently, you know, you can make those 9 turns go a long way.
Absolutely. Yeah, as Charlie was saying, everything is just so connected and that, you know, as soon as you place something somewhere and you see that there's an extra action icon on it, and then you see like there's like, oh, I can play there. Oh, what does that do? Oh, and then I get this. Oh, and then I go over here. It's like, oh my God, I just did four things, but only placed one thing. And obviously, if you're the kind of person that wants to analyze every step of the way, then that could be a little overwhelming. But for kind of just exploring the game and finding those connections more organically, it's a lot of fun. My takeaway, I think I want to have be, you know, it's more just I really loved this. Having the cards come out in the castle. And so they'd have the action, kind of the action selection there. And then those would actually move to your tableau if you put a courtier on it. And then that would actually make it so you could have triggered those yourself, and it's your own personal card now. And when you did that, that would actually bump that card to the lantern line, and you'd flip it over, and you'd just get a permanent bonus to your lantern actions, which you can get multiples of in a single turn sometimes. And like just that flow of that card going from the main space to your space to being flipped upside down is just so elegant and yet so impactful with what's going on in the game. I just think that's a really cool concept. And everyone's invested in what that next card will be because it creates new actions for you to use.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think my takeaway is related to using dice as workers. Because when we were doing this worker placement series, I was thinking, I know there's some worker placement games where there's different types of workers that you can draft.
Mm-hmm. Like Charterstone has a small worker and a big worker.
Yeah, yep.
Or a golem worker. Spoiler.
yeah, but, and I didn't think about this one as being different workers, but they are kind of like you have so many options between both the number and the color.
Yeah.
And this game would work actually pretty decently still if they were just colors, I think, and not numbers.
Oh, sure.
But the dynamicness of the numbers is what makes it so interesting, too. And I like that the game has a gradient of everything you pick has a slightly different value.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like almost a little too hard to figure out what the best move is to the point where it's like, okay, I think this is
I want to try enough. This and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're always getting something. It doesn't right. ever feel bad.
Unless you just keep going to the well. Sorry, Ananda.
I didn't mind it. I got some money.
I think I had to go there 3 times. That's 1/3 of my turns wasted.
Yep.
I mean, it's not wasted, but it feels like it was wasted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard to go on the kind of gimme space more than a couple times because, yeah, you want to play with the rest of the game.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
So, yeah, dice workers and also the fact that you're drafting for your workers.
Mm-hmm.
Like that combo. It's really a drafting game plus worker placement game.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And that the meeples are not actually the worker placement mechanic, which always makes me laugh because it does have the meeples.
Yeah, the guys that
right.
The gardeners and warriors yeah. and courtiers.
And they're even specifically designed to be different looking, which is adorable. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they don't actually improve your action economy or like affect well, your action economy.
I mean, they do in the sense that taking your actions on your board becomes more efficient.
True. That's true. That's true.
It is interesting. Also, each type is, as you place more and more of them mm-hmm. on the board, you're exposing the resource that you need for the next type. So like
yeah.
you place the gardeners and you expose anvils, which you need for warriors, and you place warriors and you expose pearls that you need for courtiers and so forth.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, like a cycle.
And it's like it's actually trying to help you, like, hey, you're doing a lot of this. If you take this action, you'll get a lot of what you need to do something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's like a kind of a common ground between this and Architects of the West Kingdom too, where it's very tightly balanced in that you do one thing, it gives you something that you can use elsewhere. So yeah, maybe that's a good design lesson, is just like, make sure that doing the same thing over and over and over doesn't happen in your game.
Yeah.
Like, you want to encourage variety.
It's side effects.
So, yeah. Side effects.
All right. So with that, let's call it a day and see you next time when we play Alchemists.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Tabletop Takeaway. This podcast is made possible by listeners like you. So please tell your friends and visit our website at thetabletoptakeaway.com, where you can suggest games and mechanics for us to cover next on the show.